listening to healthradio.fm. I am your host, Tamina McNabb. I have on the line with me today, Sandor Katz. You're out of the U.S., and you are the fermentation, there's a lot of names for you, fermentation king, you're the Sandor Kraut. All that I know is that if people want to speak about or learn about fermenting, they go to you. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Now, I've been to your website, which is wildfermentation.com, and you are an author of a couple of books. You travel around the world speaking on the subject. How did you get involved in this crazy line of work?
I would say there were several steps in you know, the path that led me here. As a kid growing up in New York City, I loved sour pickles, which are, pickles that are just fermented in a brine with no vinegar, usually with some garlic and dill. And it was just a flavor that I always have been drawn to. But nobody in my family was making them or anything like that. When I was in my mid-20s, I spent a couple of years following a macrobiotic diet, and macrobiotics actually really places a bit of emphasis on the digestive stimulation of pickles and other kinds of live culture foods. And it was during that time that I started noticing that when I ate the pickles that I loved as a kid, I could literally feel my salivary glands under my tongue squirting, that these foods quite literally got my digestive juices flowing. I observed that and in the macrobiotic way, I would just eat some pickles at the beginning of a meal specifically for that action. But, about 21 years ago in 1993, I moved from New York City to rural Tennessee and I got involved in keeping a garden for the first time. And when the cabbage was ready, there was a whole row of cabbages that we needed to use. And so from the practical perspective of a garden and a sort of, fleeting abundance, I realized this other practical benefit of fermentation, which is it's a strategy for, making use of the harvest. And so that gave me a reason to learn how to make sauerkraut, which is incredibly simple. I learned how, from the joy of cooking. And I've really been making sauerkraut and all kinds of different ferments ever since then.
All good chefs and home cooks start with the joy of cooking. Absolutely. tell us, though, Sandor, what's the difference between fermenting something and pickling something in vinegar?
Okay, so fermentation really describes anything that is created by the transformative action of microorganisms. So, certain kinds of ferments are not pickles at all. I mean, wine is not a pickle. Yogurt is not a pickle. So there are lots of ferments that aren't pickles, but the categories of ferment and pickle sort of overlap. There are pickles that are not ferments, there are ferments that are not pickles, but there are foods that are pickles as well as ferments. Well, a pickle is anything that's preserved in an acidic medium. And so most contemporary pickles that we find on supermarket shelves, basically are, vegetables that are being preserved in vinegar. And so it's basically hot vinegar being poured over vegetables, which satisfies the criteria for a pickle. It's preserved in an acidic medium. Although the vinegar itself is a product of fermentation, the pickles are not produced by fermentation. You're using vinegar that was previously fermented, heating it up, and then using that as a medium for preserving the vegetables. So, you can either have bacteria produce lactic acid and preserve vegetables through lactic acid produced by vegetables, bacteria digesting the vegetables, or you can pour live vinegar. The benefit of the fermented pickles is that they're probiotic. Assuming that you're not heat processing them afterwards, they have live bacteria.
That's good for you in
their own right. Right. We've all been indoctrinated throughout our lives into the idea that bacteria are dangerous. And without denying that there exist bacteria that can potentially make us sick, science and biology and medicine, have definitely been realizing that, bacteria are essential to us. 10 years ago, biologists came to the conclusion that the cells of our bodies are outnumbered 10 to 1 by bacteria that we're host to. And, you know, far from being parasites or freeloaders, these bacteria give us our functionality. They enable us to effectively digest food and assimilate nutrients. What we call our immune system is mostly the work of these bacteria. We're learning that the production and regulation of serotonin and other chemical compounds that determine how we think and how we feel are regulated by gut bacteria in ways that we don't fully understand. So, you know, many different aspects of our functionality involve bacteria. So,
why do you think that we went on this big sort of rage of killing bacteria? I mean, we went through this whole hand sanitizer phenomenon, which if you really think about it, is totally bizarre.
But now we're not over it.
I know. Well, the funny part now, though, Sandra, is now they have hand sanitizers that kill the bacteria and then give you back another kind of good bacteria, which is just bizarre to me. Where do you see fermentation coming into play?
Develop this sort of, you know, antibacterial feeling, war on bacteria. I mean, yeah. It's really because the earliest triumphs of microbiology, although Louis Pasteur did his earliest work, you know, for the wine industry in order to understand fermentation better, the earliest triumphs of microbiology really involved identifying pathogenic bacteria. And the popular imagination, bacteria became equated with danger, disease, and death. You know, even though, you know, science now has a more nuanced view of things, I think in the popular imagination, you know, that's still largely how we think about bacteria, sort of vectors of disease. And it's a relatively limited range of bacteria that can make us sick. And what protects us from the limited range of bacteria that can make us sick are the, you know, healthy communities of bacteria that are a normal part of us, but which are under attack, you know, by antibiotic drugs, by antibacterial cleansing products, by chlorinated water, by the chemical arsenal of the war on bacteria.
People are starting to realize, Sandor, that once you take an antibiotic for whatever, you know, plagues you for your illness, it takes years to repopulate your system again with good bacteria. Give me an example of some of the things that if, say, somebody does have to go on an antibiotic, what do you recommend they start doing from a fermentation perspective, whether it's kefir or kombucha? What should they be doing to sort of help them along with the process of repopulating their systems again?
In the realm of, you know, bacterial stimulation of our health, biodiversity is the name of the game. It's not that there's one single food, yogurt or kefir or sauerkraut or kombucha. It's that eating these bacterially rich foods, eating a variety of bacterially rich foods, cultivating biodiversity is the best way to maintain, replenish, rebuild biodiversity in the gut. So I don't think that there's, you know, there's a single food or a single, you know, probiotic agent that sort of answers all the questions. It's a process of, you know, rebuilding biodiversity in our bodies.
Now, one summer's gone by, so a summer and a half ago, I had read about kefir and these little grains, these magic sort of grains that you can buy, and I actually went on eBay and bought some of these grains, and a year and a half later, I still am growing my own, making my own kefir, and I think that it just tastes so much different than what you get in the store. And then from there,
in North America, the commercial kefir is not true historical kefir.
No, it can't be. You and I both know that.
But kefir is very easy to make, and the only tricky part is finding these kefir grains. They're very widely available. If you look on the internet, you might even find someone in your town that's willing to just share some with you. There's trading posts on my website. I have addresses of some of these internet trading posts of different kinds of cultures. But once you make them, then they're just self-perpetuating. Then it's like having a pet. You just have to keep on feeding it. And then they will just multiply, and you can share them with your friends. And
I share them with the dog and cat.
You could potentially be drinking kefir for the rest of your life, just on the basis of the set of grains that you got. All the ferments are self-perpetuating like that, and that's, I think, one of the really exciting things about it. And, you know, they kind of force you to get into a rhythm. That can be challenging for some people, but it's also, you know, an exciting process. Fermentation is safe. I mean, I think that because of the war on bacteria, many people imagine that, you know, when you're dealing with the cultivation and ingestion of bacteria, there are hidden dangers. You know, at least in the realm of vegetable fermentation, there is no case history of illness. According to the USDA, there has never been a single reported case of food poisoning or illness stemming from fermented vegetables. There are very few foods that are that safe and have that kind of a track record.
Let's talk about Japan. Now, I'm a Christian, but I lived at a Buddhist temple in Japan for 5 years, go figure. The only thing I had to do was make sure I shut my curtains when it was Christmas time and my lights were flashing. But truly, like a Buddhist temple, so I was exposed to, at the time, 20 years ago, not knowing, some seriously fermented food. Let's talk about natto. Do you eat natto at all?
Sure.
Can you eat it?
Sure. I love natto. I make natto. So, I mean, natto is a Japanese style of fermented soybeans that's a little bit notorious in the West. You know, because during the fermentation, they develop a kind of a slimy coating.
Slimy.
And also, it's an alkaline ferment, so it has a little smell like ammonia.
Yeah,
so it's an acquired taste.
Nicely.
Many, many fermentations are acquired taste. You know, think about stinky cheese, okay? So I don't know whether you're someone who loves stinky cheese or hates stinky cheese. But you know, the first time you tasted a stinky cheese, you probably didn't like it. Like, nobody does. We learn to like it through, you know, repeated exposure. And, you know, if you walk into a gourmet food store, you know, anywhere in the world and look around at the foods that people are elevating on this pedestal, they're almost all products of fermentation, because fermentation creates these really, you know, strong, compelling flavors. But rarely are they flavors that we're born loving. You know, generally they're flavors that we acquire through exposure.
Now, you are coming to Canada in Victoria, British Columbia. You'll be attending the Health, Wellness, and Sustainability Festival. I believe that takes place on February the 8th, is it? Is that correct?
Oh, right. I'm sorry. It's the 7th, right. I'm looking forward to coming to Victoria. Throughout the time I've been doing this, there's been huge interest in Canada in fermentation, and I'm certainly looking forward to being back in Canada.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to come out there and meet you as well. Now, if people want further information on your books on fermentation, they can go to wildfermentation.com.
Yeah. Wildfermentation.com, right. I have two books about fermentation that are out. One is called Wild Fermentation. That came out in 2003, and then The Art of Fermentation, which came out in 2012. And they're both do-it-yourself books, you know, learning how to ferment anything, whether it's making kefir, whether it's making natto, whether it's making sauerkraut or kimchi or yogurt or simple homemade country wines, basic cheese making, sourdough, breads and pancakes. I mean, the realm of fermentation is huge. It's practiced in every part of the world. It's so old that it's prehistoric and nobody really knows the origins of it.
And apparently you're really good at what you do, because the New York Times called you, what do they call you, the unlikely rock star of American food scene? That's big. That's awesome. And everyone else called you what, Sandor Kraut? I mean, you've got all these fantastic names that you
go by. Yeah, that's a nickname. As I was getting obsessed with fermentation, a friend of mine started calling me Sandor Kraut, and the nickname has stuck.
You know what? It's easy to kind of get addicted, because once you start transforming things and taking control of flavors, and you know, whether for me, my big thing is, can I get my kombucha to be really busy, and I get excited in a sort of totally geeky way.
Yeah, sure. And there's the basics of how to make all these things is very simple, and yet there's a huge amount of technique, and getting it the way you want it is a learning curve. But I mean, I really just try to, you know, I'm approaching all of this, from the perspective of empowerment and, you know, helping people who might feel afraid just because they're dealing with bacteria and they've been told all their lives the bacteria are so dangerous, just giving them the information they need to feel confident making these things at home. And I mean, all these processes are thousands of years old, so it's not rocket science. I mean, our ancestors were able to do them with much less equipment and, you know, ability to control conditions. So, you know, they're really, really simple. But when people get into them, they really can devote themselves for, you know, an entire lifetime to developing nuanced technique for, you know, making bread, making cheese. But, you know, many of the greatest culinary achievements and delicacies that people enjoy around the world are products of fermentation.
And I think, too, Sandor, you know, 2-3 years from now, I believe what you're doing is going to be even bigger than where it stands today. With the way certain viruses and bacteria are, you know, going from one country to another via plane, I think the only way to really combat it is to have a healthy gut, and people will be going back to basics. And I think that what you're doing is, you know, like you said, it's withstood the test of time, and here we are sort of maybe full circle again, where it's going to become a very important part of people's safety when it comes to their health on a daily basis.
Yeah, so I certainly agree.
You're the rock star today, but you're going to be, I believe, even more important in the next couple of years. Thank you so much for being on our show, Sandor. I look forward to meeting you in Victoria, and have a safe flight on your way over here.
Okay, thank you so much. Take care.
We'll talk to you soon. You bet.